And welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. Let's talk about food now. The big news this month about what we should eat and why has to do with cholesterol.
The Federal Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has made significant changes to its recommended healthy diets. The panel now says it doesn't really matter how much cholesterol or unsaturated fats you eat.
They've backed away from previously recommended low-fat diets. Instead, they urge Americans to eat more fats found in fish, nuts, olive, and vegetable oils. The panel also urges people to drastically cut back on added sugars and salt in their food.
But the key takeaway is this. The new recommendations acknowledge years of scientific evidence that shows almost no relationship between how much cholesterol you eat and your LDL readings, or the levels of so-called bad cholesterol in your blood. Now, we want to spend some time really understanding this change, given that these recommendations go on to shape official federal dietary guidelines, and that affects how millions of Americans eat. So to help us do so, we're joined by Professor Alex Lichtenstein. She is a professor of nutrition science and policy at Tufts University and vice chair of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee that issued this new report. Professor Lichtenstein, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Nice to be with you again.
Also with us, Corby Kummer, senior editor at The Atlantic, and he's a James Beard Award-winning writer as well. He joins us today from NPR's studios in Washington. Corby, welcome back to you.
Hi, Meghna.
It's wonderful to have you both.
And to be here.
So, listeners, let me just throw out some questions to you because we'd love to hear from you. Do you follow federal dietary guidelines? Are you skeptical of them? What do you make of this idea that it doesn't really matter how much cholesterol you eat when it comes to controlling the levels of good and bad cholesterol in your blood? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Find us on Facebook and Twitter if you want, at Radio Boston. So, Professor Lichtenstein, let me just start with you because you were on the panel that issued this advisory. Can you just give us, in a nutshell, pardon the pun, but give us in a nutshell sort of what the new recommendations are regarding what we should be aiming to eat?
Well, there are actually no recommendations in this report. This report was tasked with summarizing the evidence and then presenting that report to the Secretaries of Health and Human Services and the USDA. And at some point at the end of this year, we will all find out what the actual dietary guidelines are. The major focus of this report was on the whole dietary pattern, so that previously, we had focused on individual components of it, and what we found is that we ended up sometimes with unanticipated consequences. So when we recommended a low-fat diet, I don't think anyone anticipated there'd be a proliferation of fat-free cookies, crackers, ice cream, and brownies.
Right.
So in 2000, that was modified.
Okay, and so specifically regarding cholesterol, what is this advisory saying? Is it saying that it doesn't really matter how many eggs we eat, or that butter's absolutely okay now? I mean, practically speaking, when it comes to how folks might approach their food, what is the advice?
Well, number one, we said that saturated fat should be restricted, so there was nothing about butter is fine. In terms of cholesterol, dietary cholesterol does not have as great an effect on plasma cholesterol levels as saturated fat does. Within the context of what the American public is currently consuming, the amount of cholesterol doesn't have a big effect. Therefore, we thought that stressing dietary cholesterol was not useful, but we needed to bring everybody back to the type of fat that they're consuming and recommending that they consume unsaturated fat from things like liquid vegetable oils, nuts, and fish. Certainly not saturated fat, but that the unsaturated fat should replace the saturated fat in the diet.
Right. So, Corby Kummer, the fact that the advisory committee says that, or acknowledges, it seems as if science has been saying that there's no appreciable relationship between dietary cholesterol and blood cholesterol, for folks like you, is or isn't that news?
Well, it's not news to me because way back when I was still in grade school, I edited a cover story for The Atlantic in 1989 called The Cholesterol Myth, and it by Thomas J. Moore. And it said that there was almost no relation between dietary cholesterol and blood cholesterol. But this is, as Dr. Lichtenstein knows well, it's very hard for most people to grasp this. And once you hear that cholesterol is bad and you shouldn't have high cholesterol, which you shouldn't, you assume that it's within your control by reducing the number of eggs and high cholesterol food that you eat. And it's very frustrating to hear it's not in your control. Mm-hmm. And in fact, even then in the late 1980s, there have been decades of research saying that I think it's between 20 and 25% of the population might in fact be quite sensitive to eating dietary cholesterol and having it show up in their serum cholesterol levels. But for most people, there's a very minimal correlation. So we didn't have to worry so much about eggs themselves and high cholesterol shellfish. And as Dr. Lichtenstein said to you, wait a minute on the Hello Butter from your opening and wait a minute on the saturated fats. There's controversy, but they're not back. So that can be in the next segment we do.
Okay.
But as far as eggs and shellfish, it is a fairly meaningless distinction for what people actually eat. So this isn't news to people who've been following this for a long time.
Right.
But for the general public, it's, do I need to just not worry about anything and not pay attention to a thing that I read in the news? And the answer is no. Dr. Mm-hmm. Lichtenstein and her fellow distinguished panel recommended to the USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services a lot of really good practical information that has to do with dietary patterns. So
right.
Don't worry about these nutrients of concern like cholesterol. Worry about plant-based foods, vegetables, you know, nuts, nice things, less animal food, and they paid attention to the environment. There's lots of great advice
yeah.
in their report.
Well, I want to ask both of you, and Corby, let me just stick with you for a second. I mean, these recommendations are made with the best of intentions, and the panel meets every 5 years or so. So it's not, to a certain degree, it's not a surprise that we might have a major change. But Professor Lichtenstein, pointed to something very important in her first response to my question, which is there have been unintended consequences, affecting millions of Americans with previous recommendations. And she pointed to the fact that after the low-fat recommendation came out, basically for a generation, we had people consuming so supposedly low-fat foods, but they were cookies, essentially, that were labeled low-fat and instead had a huge amount of sugar and carbs in them. I mean, this has helped shape possibly the health and diet of a generation of Americans, has it not, Corby?
Yeah, this is a huge problem. And indeed, when we're saying not so fast about butter, what we have to add right away is, but don't replace it with carbohydrates and unrefined, as I hope Dr. Lichtenstein is saying, yes, that's right. Because the terrible thing in telling people to lower one thing is they assume they have license and carte blanche to eat whatever of something you haven't happened to mention is. And the food industry is very glad to step in with very high carbohydrate foods. But in fact, added sugars are the big villain in the new set of guidelines. Mm. They should be a part of every label. They should be no more than, 10 to 12 teaspoons instead of the 20 to 22 added teaspoons of sugar a day that people are eating. There shouldn't be refined carbohydrates, which is to say white food as opposed to whole grains. These are very bad for the diet. So it's not just these little things that you're telling them, it's the overall big picture.
Right. So Professor Lichtenstein, chime in here. I mean, I know that it's basically almost impossible to foresee unintended consequences, but with these new recommendations, I mean, are you concerned that the food industry might find creative ways of introducing all sorts of new products now as well?
I'm not too concerned. I think one of the important things is to remember that for the past 35 years since the dietary guidelines have been issued, most of it, we've gotten it right. There are occasional times where things didn't go exactly as planned, and that's with the low-fat diets and the unanticipated consequences. But for the most part, we've got it right. And I think one of the challenges is that we haven't gotten people to adhere to the guidelines, because if they listen to the other part, even of the low-fat message, of consume lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes, and then we probably wouldn't have seen such an adverse effect. I think now everybody has their antennas up, and I don't think industry is going to rush into something that we're going to be uncomfortable with. I think we're at the point where it should be win-win for everyone. And what I'm actually hoping is that the American public will really embrace these new guidelines as the whole picture. So we'll avoid something like increasing the refined carbohydrates and sugars, which I 100% agree with, and that as the public embraces these and they demand more of the foods that are consistent with the dietary guidelines, whether it be in the supermarket, whether it be in restaurants, then we'll end up seeing more of them.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Professor Alice Lichtenstein. She's a professor of nutrition science and policy at Tufts University and vice chair of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee that this month issued a new advisory about cholesterol and about fats and what we should and shouldn't be eating in a healthy diet. We're also joined by Corby Kummer. He's the James Beard Award-winning senior editor at The Atlantic. And we are talking about specifically these guidelines that the advisory committee has released. And Professor Lichtenstein, as you can imagine, and as you well know, the advisory has received a lot of response and even pushback from certain corners. I mean, I'm seeing there was an op-ed in the New York Times by Nina Teichholz, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly.
She's author of The Big Fat
Surprise. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. That's the subtitle of her book. She basically takes issue with the advice of to eliminate lean meat from the list of recommended healthy foods. And she worries that would lead to fewer protein choices that could encourage Americans to eat even more carbs.
I think I'm very happy you brought that up, because one of the things that's happening with all this pushback is we're getting a lot of inaccuracies in the media, and she is totally wrong on this point. It's clearly stated that lean meat can be part of a healthy diet, and it also stated that for certain groups, particularly women of childbearing age, that who need extra iron in the diet, that lean meat can be an extremely good source because it's highly bioavailable. So I think with all the flurry of responses and reactions, we have to make sure we keep our facts very straight.
Mm. And Corby, what's your thought about that? Because when the official recommendations do come out later through the USDA, I mean, it does actually have quite a profound effect, because it helps shape school lunches. It helps shape, you know, foods that are supported by the WIC program, for example. I mean, millions of people will be directly affected.
That's what we always have to remember with these recommendations. They're kind of like dog whistles. They're not necessarily for us to chew over. Yes, it's a horrible pun. They're really the effect that it has on the industry that is providing most foods, and on school lunches and WIC. For example, low sodium. This is one of those things that's terribly stubborn and frustrating, just like eating one less egg a day isn't really going to make that much difference as far as the next blood test you get and your doctor saying whether you're doing well or not. It's the same thing with salt and lowering sodium. It's not so much up to us, and it's very frustrating to think that what we eat and what's on the dinner table and the salt shaker aren't so much what matters as the amount of salt that industry is adding to every part of our foods. And now what we're all concerned about is added sugars.
Mm.
So I think this point about the industry and added salt is important, because we've got bogged down in the weeds of should it be 1,500 milligrams, should it be 2,300 milligrams as far as the target, whereas we're just consuming too much sugar. And as Mr. Comer pointed out, it's coming from the industry and the foods that we buy.
Right.
So by not getting down in the weeds and focusing more on how we can shift the whole population, I think we can all benefit.
Corby, let me ask you, though. I mean, I don't mean to be too flip here, but given what you just said, I mean, is there any point in the federal government to issue dietary guidelines at all if many times it just leads people to be stressed and worried or down a path that may not lead to their best health?
Well, of course there is, because what it points out, it's not just the bad things and the knuckle wrapping schoolmarm effect. It's the idea that there are things that are good for you. And for a long time, the emphasis on whole grains and beans and nuts and tree nuts and unsaturated fat and olive oil and vegetables and fish. And I'm making myself hungry just thinking about this because I think it's really good. And a Mediterranean style diet actually says there are things that you can do that will help you and will help you to better health. At the same time, there are the nya-nya, stop eating so much sugar, see what you can do about reducing that. Sugar-sweetened beverages are on everybody's enemy list. And the more people understand, they just have no place in the diet. Sugar-sweetened sodas, a lot of fruit juices, just take them out. Concentrate on reducing the number of added sugars and the amount of whole foods. Those are all within these recommendations, and it's good advice to have.
Right. And in fact, I mean, perhaps the voice that we're missing right now, and we'll reach out to them eventually, and I'd love to hear from them, is the voice of the food industry in and of itself. Because, you know, for example, regarding the new thinking about how should sugar be labeled on foods. There's the FDA has said it wants to require a distinct line for added sugar on food nutrition labels, and the food industry is really pushing back against that, Corby.
I really hope that's the thing that's most important right now as far as helping the nutrition label, I think, is forcing industry to break out the amount of added sugars as opposed to naturally occurring sugars. And what that will do, again, it's the whole dog whistle thing. It's the curbing effect it has on the industry. Once it's forced to disclose this on yogurt, on all kinds of processed foods that we don't think have added sugars to them and do, it's not so much that every consumer is going to be suddenly getting out her glasses and magnifying glasses when she has zero time already to look at labels, although people do look at labels more than I think they're given credit for. It's the effect it has on the industry to be forced to disclose this information. Mm. And that means that they will change the way they formulate food and there will be less added sugar in foods. I'm really hoping that does go forward.
Yeah. Well, if I could just take a step back, Professor Lichtenstein, and talk about the cholesterol picture here in the recommended or the advisory once again. I'm curious about why here we are this time around that this change in terms of it doesn't really you shouldn't really worry all that much about the amount of food-based cholesterol that you eat, because in our research for this conversation today, I noticed an article that said that before 1983 there had been six major studies, six randomized controlled trials that involved almost 2,500 men, no women, which is a separate story, but that basically found that, you know, what we were talking about earlier, that there was no link between cholesterol consumed and serum levels of cholesterol. That was 1983. And yet now, it's only now in 2015 that we're getting a complementary change in the dietary advisory. Why did it take so long?
Well, I think there's a lot of literature on dietary cholesterol and serum cholesterol levels. And in some cases, studies were specifically run with individuals who are at high risk of cardiovascular disease. And we know that there are certain genotypes or certain individuals that are going to be hypersensitive to dietary cholesterol. Also, in a lot of those earlier studies, not the ones you're talking about, but the ones that actually showed there was a close link, they were feeding very, very high levels of cholesterol. So you really had a mixed literature. And then I also think that there is this tendency to carry forward recommendations. And lastly, the committees, which are federally mandated to be reconstituted every 5 years to review the guidelines, are more sophisticated in how they review the literature and really are very rigorous in terms of making sure that all the data is assessed, not just the most recent data or the data that they hear the most about. And at this point, this committee, the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, looked at all the data, looked at what current intake levels are, which is similar to what the current recommendations are, and then also took into consideration the confusion between dietary cholesterol and saturated fat, and said, well, the data concluded that the data supports restricting saturated fat replacing it with polyunsaturated fat, not with refined carbohydrate. But the data for the cholesterol for the majority of Americans was not that strong. And it's not particularly surprising that this committee came to that conclusion, because in November of 2013, the American Heart Association, the American College of Cardiology released their lifestyle guidelines, and they also concluded that the data to support a major emphasis on dietary cholesterol was not that strong.
Right. So, Corby Kummer, I mean, it feels like we as food consumers might be starting to get used to every few years a sense of food whiplash, maybe. I mean, is part of the problem that we tend to, and maybe this is some real-time media criticism here of our own show, that basically as a food eating public, we tend to focus too much on individual ingredients or individual aspects of food without taking a bigger look at the whole picture of what we're eating?
Well, for one thing, there's the maw of the internet that requires food news all the time, or just news all the time. So it's so much easier to say, gosh, there's huge news. Butter is back. Eggs are back. So eggs are back. Let's just stipulate that for today's discussion. Eggs are back. Butter is not completely back. But given how little fat people actually are, it's in their control to eat. What is so much harder for most people to think about is paying attention to every single thing they eat. So it's not just what they are putting on the dinner table, which is generally, you know, kind of pretty anodyne and innocent. It's mostly what they're buying and what's being made by other people. That's so much harder to control. And the larger patterns of just making sure that you eat more fruits and vegetables, like whole ones, that you go to places that have them, you know, that's fairly easy to do if you're thinking about it. But if you have the idea that just looking at a label that says no cholesterol on your fruit, which never had it in the first place, it's easy for everybody to be lulled into the newest news that can offer some kind of panacea. The actual changing of dietary habits and making yourself change the overall eating habit, that's what every nutritionist, everybody who writes about food, that's the much higher hill to climb.
Right. Now, if both of you might allow, I want to end this conversation playing a little clip that we dug up from a Woody Allen movie, Sleeper. It's I think the movie's from 1973, roughly, about a man.
I know this clip.
who wakes up after a long period of time to an entirely different world. So let's just play it.
He requested something called wheat germ, organic honey, and tiger's milk.
Oh yes, those are the charm substances that some years ago were felt to contain life-preserving properties.
You mean there was no deep fat, no steak, or cream pies, or hot fudge?
Those were thought to be unhealthy. Precisely the opposite of what we now know to be true.
Is that where we find ourselves, Professor Lichtenstein?
You know, it's really not. We've been advocating dietary patterns that are rich in vegetables, fruits, whole grains, nuts, legumes, fish for a long time. I agree that it's difficult in most cases for people to do that, because our default option when we eat out or people prepare, we get food prepares in the supermarket, is the less healthy option is the most healthy option. Most people eat what's in front of them. If whole grain bread is put on the table in a restaurant, most people will eat it.
Yeah.
If a hamburger comes with whole grain bread, then they'll probably eat it. But the default option is not currently the healthier option.
Yeah.
I also really agree that changing the food label is going to have a big impact, because we know when trans fat was added to the food label, there was a huge reformulation of products that were currently on the market, and the introduction of new products had very low to no levels of trans fat. So again, the default option was the healthier option. And I think that that's really where we have to put our emphasis, not on these little individual aspects of the diet.
Right.
I think of the whole picture.
Right. Well, Corby Kummer, I feel like having a quiche for dinner tonight.
Go right ahead and enjoy it.
saturated fat and make sure the crust is made with whole wheat flour.
Will do, will do. Corby Cummer is the James Beard Award-winning senior editor at The Atlantic. Always great to talk to you, Corby. Thank you so much for joining us.
And you, Magna, thank you.
And Alice Lichtenstein, she's a professor of nutrition science and policy at Tufts University and vice chair of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. It was great to speak with you, Professor. Thank you so much.
Always so good talking to you.
Listeners, stick with us. When we come back, we'll have the latest on the trial of accused marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.